Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals the hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Good evening. This is Kirk Miller, and I'm covering for Yada, or Craig was supposed to be here tonight. At first, I was told that he would not be able to make it. JB, unfortunately, is ill as well. So welcome to the Shabbat Show. I did prepare some material earlier, and I'll cover some of that as well, but we want to hopefully Craig will be joining us shortly. So we will continue until he comes, and then we'll go from there. A while back, I was doing some studies of Matanyah 5 and the Beatitudes, and those things actually bothered me quite a lot because of the English translations, and I did not translate Greek. I had never done it before, so I was relatively babe out of the woods. So what I had done was I did kind of a crash course. I do have some books that have some Greek words translated, quite a few, about 500 into Hebrew. So I knew I could use some of those, and then the rest of it I'll just have to plow through. So what I came up with was the things that are called the Beatitudes, which starts in Matthew 5:3 and goes through 5:11. And quite frankly, the English translation bothered me so much that I just kind of didn't know what to do about it. Because what he's doing is Yahusha is talking about the characteristics of the people that he wants to be around, the people that he is saving, his family. And the words that are translated are not quite there at all. So I went through, and I'm going to try to share that with you. Now, forgive me, I'm a little bit off. I thought Craig was there. So forgive me, I will try to get back into this, and I have a few little notes here, and we'll go from there. So as most of y'all might know, the Beatitudes start out with, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." So what I did is I looked through that, and the word that bothered me so much was poor. And the reason it bothered me so much is that there are a lot of people who are poor, and it says poor in spirit, and quite frankly, there's an awful lot of people in the world today and that are poor in spirit. So it's not a characteristic that he just identifies with as something he to be blessed. So what are they talking about? And so I looked up the words on that, and I found that I had to go from the Greek, which is potechoi, and that is poor, needy, and helpless, and of course pneumati, which is spirit. That one is pretty easy. So poor in spirit, if you look up that and you try to find an English, a Hebrew alternative, I came up with about three. And the first one is ebion, which is rather vague because it means a void within oneself that needs to be filled, or a want. Also, one who suffers undeservedly. Well, that's not terrible. In fact, you'll find that the ebion is a word that the Ebionites adopted for their name. And then there's another one, dal, which is not very helpful. And the one that I did choose was ani. And ani was rather interesting because ani is a word that means people who endure, people under affliction, people who endure under affliction and persecution. And they also is, if when you think about enduring, you're thinking about the word for that we get from that is from Sarah and Israel. This is to endure with, to persevere with, and to deal with difficulties, even to struggle with and even wrestle with. And the word in Hebrew is ani. And then I went a little bit further on that, and I went to the ani and turned it into the looked at the pictographs to see what they might offer as well. And ani is spelled with an ain, a nun, and a yod. And that would give us an idea that the perspective of this person who is ani would be looking at the nun, looking through the nun to be raised up by Yah, in the sense of the Yod being used as the third letter. And the spirit, of course, is quite simple. That one is simply the Ruach, and we know that is the Ruach Kodesh. So that one is not too bad, but what we're really looking at is people who endure. A quality, in essence, this entire thing, in my opinion, is based on the concept that things that Yah likes, or the characteristics that Yah likes in his people. And the first one, of course, is to endure. The second one we came to, if you read the English translation, is blessed or happy, joyous and satisfied, or they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. That one gave me a little bit of trouble too, because there's a lot of people who mourn. There's a lot of things to mourn about. So is it? And it's kind of a vague. Most of these terms are quite vague. So I looked up mourn and I tried to figure out what would be the appropriate translation for that. And what I came up with was ana. Ana is to mourn and to lament, to groan or to moan, wail and lamentations. It also means, when you look a little deeper, it also means to how one grieves over the death of a relationship. And there I think I kind of struck a little bit of gold, because the people he's talking about are those who are sorry that they don't have a relationship with Yahweh, or have discovered that the relationship is broken by most of the family. So that would be those who really feel the need or grieve over the death of a relationship. Yisrael and Yehuda in the last days will become that. They will actually, when they recognize that the relationship was broken and Yahweh returns, then they will be very much Anna in that sense. They will be mourning that existence or that situation. However, they will be, it is a characteristic that he's looking for, people who understand what's going on and deeply care about the relationship. The verse 5:5 states in the English, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. And I'll be honest with you, I kind of just hate the word meek, because of all of God's people, when you analyze them, when you think in terms of Moshe and Noah, Dod, Yosha, prophets, these are not meek people. So I looked up, I did a little study, hard study on the word meek, so I'm understanding it properly. And I went to Webster's dictionary, and it defines meek thusly. It says, showing patience and humility and long-suffering. Well, that's pretty good. And the most common understanding, it says, is easily imposed upon, submissive, spineless. Well, that's a little untenable. I can't imagine anyone who is walking the path towards Yahweh through the Moed Mikra, especially in today's or any other period of time, where they would be considered submissive and spineless, and I can't imagine that that's a characteristic that Yahweh would embrace. The other word, the other meaning for in English Webster's Dictionary, in the English would be as an archaic meaning, which usually means it's no longer current or applicable, would be kind and gentle. This doesn't describe Noah, Abraham, Moshe, Dod, or Yahusha either. So I went with, I'm thinking along the lines of showing patience, humility, and long-suffering to start with. So I took the Greek, which is praos, which they use to, is the word that they take out of the Greek and translate to meek, from prao, which is translated gentle. And then I looked it up in the Hebrew, and the word is the most appropriate for the translation would be anal. So Yahusha would have been using the word anal, I believe. And I looked up anal where it might be found in some other places, and Yahweh dictated to Moshe in Numbers 12:13. On some of his dictations, he uses a now in the same context. So in addition to that, we discovered that a now, through all the lexicons, if you dig a little deeper, you'll find that the a now is an adjective and is related to the verb ana. And we've covered ana many, many times, which means to be defiled or to be afflicted or to be oppressed. But there's also some other meanings. You know, so many of these Hebrew words have a positive meaning as well as a negative meaning, and it's all in the context. But we're looking at our context here is Yahusha is talking about the characteristics of people that he embraces. And here's a couple that kind of went, threw me for a little bit of a loop. First time I looked at it, I wasn't expecting to find this. One of the meanings of Anna is to sing, that is songs, and then immediately I started thinking about the Psalms of Dod. And then also is to answer and respond. Well, most of the times when we talk about someone answering a response, we're talking about the Moed Mikras. When you're called out, when you're Korah, being called out, you are asked to, the whole reason we Shemar Torah, for instance, is to study the words, carefully consider what Yahweh is saying, understand, try to understand what we're being taught, and then respond appropriately. And the response that he's mostly looking for, of course, is to go through the path of the Moed Mikra. That is the path, the one single path that leads us back to Yahweh. So after I went through that one, which was the one that started the whole interest in the section, was I kept asking myself, why did they choose meek over? Why didn't they just say one who answers in response? That would be appropriate. That would be much more accurate, but they don't, and that's what throws off so many people in using the English translations. And it also begs the question. I thought that what do these guys study in seminary? I mean, they have access to all the same lexicons that we do, and all the lexicons that just about anybody can do this online. In fact, I do outside of a handful of books. I do most of all of this online now, so it's no reason for them to have a different translation than what we're looking up here and what we're discovering here. So on that's the meek. Now we move on to 5:6, which is kind of interesting. It says, "Blessed are they that hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they will be filled." And that sounds very nice, and we're going to dig in a little bit deeper into that. We'll take the words that are most important in the sentence, hunger, thirst, and righteousness. And let's look at the word for hunger they use. Now, I butcher the Greek almost worse than I do the Hebrew, so bear with me. But the Greek word for this is pineo, and it means hunger, needy, and also to desire earnestly. The Hebrew word that was most appropriate to translate from Greek back to the Hebrew would be ra'ab. Ra'ab, as you know, is to be hungry or to be, is true, but it's also to be observant, to consider the perspective of the familial covenant or Yah's family. And I got that, the observe is obviously, and to carefully consider things is obvious, as well as to be hungry for. But when you look at the letters, you have three letters in Ra'ab, you have the Rosh is a man who's looking towards the Ein, which is the eye, to get his perspective. He's carefully considering something. He's observing it. And what they're observing, what he's observing is perspective regarding the B, or the Bet, the family home, the Yah's home. Now, you could use Keflin or Kefan, which is hungry and desire, but I dismiss that primarily as an option because it doesn't resonate in the context of Yahusha talking about these characteristics that that Yahweh looks for. You wouldn't bless someone just because they're hungry. The Greek word for thirst, hunger and thirst is the line, is dipetheo. The Hebrew alternative that I chose was the same, which is when in a pictograph, you have a man lying down, an M for the water, and an aleph. So the picture means someone who is, doesn't help us a whole lot, but it does show us that it's water, and the water of life is the way I would interpret it, because the water is pointing to an aleph, which is usually considered as the leader, someone who's trying to protect the flock. So what you really have in the Hebrew is lack of sufficient water or dry ground. But also, when you use water, you can use that. It's used many, many times as a metaphor for life. So the water of life, or the Ruach Kodesh, also comes to mind in that context, because the M or the Mem is used multiple times to represent the Ruach Kodesh. So now we've got a fairly decent idea about hunger and thirst after righteousness. So we look at righteousness, and Daikei Suni is righteousness in Greek. It's justice or innocence. And that's a very easy one to translate, because that would be Tzedek. Tzedek is justice, is uprightness. It is to be right, to be correct. It is to travel the path, to prevent yourself from being lost, to walk on the right path, and also to be steadfast. So what we have is one who is hungry and thirst after righteousness is one who wishes to be, who wants to go down the path to become part of Yahweh's family. That's a whole lot different context than we would have learned in a church setting they were reading these Beatitudes. The next line in the English text would be, "Blessed are the pure of heart, for they shall see God." I skipped one. Blessed, let's go to 5-7. I do beg your pardon. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Mercy is fairly simple. We have a couple of choices here, and I'll present those to you, and you can see what you think, of course. Merciful is a quality of mercy as defined by the Torah, by the Torah teaching, rather, as one who tells the world the truth, and not tells one the truth, not merciful. It wouldn't be merciful, for instance, if you capitulate to all the religious and the people on the wrong path are going the wrong direction. Merciful, as it is described here, the Hebrew is kanan, like Yahu kanan. It means to provide protection, to rescue and help another, to treat someone as valuable. And I would think that if Elomon in Greek is merciful and pity and compassion, that's fine. But in this context, once again, Yahusha must be using kanan in its full meaning. To be nice to someone is not just being nice to someone or helping them out a little bit, but to provide protection, to rescue and help another. How do you rescue someone of great value other than to get them on the right path, or show them the way through the Moed Mikras, show them, to teach them and help them understand the Torah? There is another option that I could have, and that would be chesed. And chesed is kindness, and it's a sympathetic nature, and it's to show favor. But the word is a little bit different. This is where I go when I translate these things. I go to Hebrew words. I go back to the pictographs. In Canaan, the word for mercy, it is written as a chet, which is a protective fence, and is followed by two nuns. Now, two nuns of the family, the future family, pictographed as a sperm. We're talking about the ongoing family. And when you have two, it usually indicates, at least most of us believe, that it indicates a male and a female. So it's the family there. Whereas chesed has an odd thing. It does have a chet to begin with, a protective fence by definition, but it uses a semek, and a semek is also another thorn which separates the chet from the doorway, chesed. The only one that makes a lot of sense to me would be to convert that to Canaan. So once again, as defined, as to show mercy from Yahweh's concept, as it is in accord with the Torah teaching and the terms expressed in his covenant agreement. If you are doing something kind for someone, and actually when we get into chapter 12, which I just started reading this week, it was a fascinating thing when it talks about this very thing, where the most merciful thing that you can do for someone is obviously to tell them the truth. They don't need a pat on the back and say, all roads lead to Yahweh. Things of that nature. So, but I will tell you that when you do something like this, then you're going to be a risk taker. And that's also part of the definition of this word, Conan. And it's implied because if you stand up to be merciful and you don't capitulate to all these multiple views of different roads and different paths, then you are going to have to stand up and take some heat. And so in my way of thinking, I think this Yoshua is talking along these lines in this particular word. I couldn't find anything else that it could be. So I'm pretty comfortable with that personally. And you also, if you think in mind, connect the dot from the first tablet of stone, you have to remember that the first three statements on the tablets of stone written by Yahweh's own hand, there's 77 words on the first tablet, 77 on the second. There are three statements on the first and seven statements on the second. And on those three statements, it is going over and over, as we are told by Yahweh, that there are certain things that are not forgivable. They are forgivable only the minute you walk away and head in the other direction. But you cannot keep your feet in Babylon. You cannot be religious. You cannot be, we just went over a whole chapter in Yashaya about being religious, where Yah hates religion. And the religious founders and the religious people who promote that that way of thinking. We're also moving into that of the people who are in chapter 12 later when Craig gets back on over here. We'll be talking about the second half of that thing that he hates the most, and that is government and military and economic schemes and economic schemers and those people. So merciful is someone who actually stands up and speaks out against the world and talks about the things that are important to Yahweh. And the next one, I think we're up to 5:8, we have a pure of heart. Let's see, 5:8, it's blessed are the pure of heart in the English translation, for they shall see God. Pure of heart is pretty, this wasn't too hard. We have two options we can do. In the Greek, katharos is clean, unstained, guiltless, and upright. That was interesting that they used the word upright in the translation of a Greek word. And the Hebrew alternative, we have two. And I'll share those two with you, and we can see what sounds most like Yosha talking. The Hebrew is tahar. And tahar means to be free from dirt, from misriam, clean from pollution, immorality, and to be pure. And we went across Mitzrayim all the time in that, in regards to that's what the matzah, while we celebrate matzah the second day right after Pesach, is to be cleansed from all this impurity, from the sins and so forth, so that we may be upright and walk with Yahweh. And it also means to be free from political as well as religion and military economic schemes. The other option I could have used is tamam. And tamam is nice. It is to be completed or finished. To be whole, clean, and upright, and perfect. So it is a good word, but I think tahara may be a little stronger, but either one of them would justify. The problem, the reason I'm going through this, and the problem you have if you're looking at a Greek text, is that there might be several words that are used for the Hebrew alternative to the Greek concept. I'm trying to look at mostly at the ones that are a little more concrete and straightforward. But it could be one of the two. So I'm not saying he absolutely said tamim instead of tahar. But it is something that you have to consider. And then just look at everything you can until you can figure out which one is the most fitting for this. And then we have the Greek word for leb. And as it said, blessed is the pure of heart, for they shall see God. Well, pure of heart, that is cardia, which is in heart, mind, or being, the inner self, the character, the seat of thought in the Greek. And that's a pretty easy one, thank goodness. We have Hebrew, which is leb. And leb, of course, is interesting because it is a staff leading towards the house or the beit. So it's an LB. And it's an organ. Obviously, it's an organ that pumps blood, but it's also seen as the seat of thought and the mind. So if Yahweh is saying this is a characteristic of Yahweh, Yahusha is saying that Yahweh thinks this is a characteristic that he's embraces, then in my way of thinking, he's embracing the way that they think, and the responsiveness of their understanding, their thinking, their understanding, and their responses to the call or the caller. At 5:9, we have this is kind of an interesting one. I spent a little bit more time here than I think on any of the others. And on 5:9, you have blessed is the peacemaker, for they shall be called the children of God. And that's good. From a Hebrew perspective, to be a peacemaker, one would need to be an observer to celebrate the feast, the Moed Mikras, and observe the Shabbat, and even be as the Loi, the joiners, bringing and enlarging the family. Oh, Greg, are you there?
I am. I'm listening to that. You know, I don't think the Hebrew was actually peacemaker, however, if I might interject. For a moment.
Sure.
I was going to say that I think that the Hebrew actually is the word that is most commonly translated peace, but doesn't actually mean peace. It only indirectly means peace. I think that he would have used either Barak or Asher for blessed.
Yeah,
the benefit of knowing the way and of going along the way would be Asher. So he's either using Asher to convey the concept that was rendered as blessed in Greek, or he's using Barak.
Right.
And in this case, I sort of think he's more likely to have used Asher. But, you know, we don't know. All we know is what it was translated into Greek. But peacemaker, the Hebrew word that is rendered peace the most often is shalom.
Yes, I know.
But that's not the primary meaning of shalom.
Some of the
primary meaning of shalom is to reconcile a relationship. So what it would really say is the person who is benefited through the narrow path to life is benefits from a reconciliation, or the person who is engaged in reconciliation is the person who is blessed by being on the correct path to life. So if you were to combine the benefits of Asher for blessing and Shalom for reconciliation, then you have a really profound thought.
Well, let me show you why I think you're right. And what I did on the Greek, and I can't pronounce this, but the translation of peacemaker came from Erenenopoeth. And then I started looking for the associated words from that, and they had Arene. And Arene is interesting. It means to join. The loi, of course, that makes me think about the loi. Tie together in a whole. Wholeness, peace of mind, welfare, and undisturbed, which brings me back to Shalom, right back what you were suggesting. And then from Polio, to make do, to accomplish, to cause, to make a path. I thought that was interesting, to make a path. And then similar to Presseo, or Presso, to perform a regular practice to attend. Now, when you say something like that to me, my brain immediately goes to Moe Mikro. So, so I agree. You know, that's some of the things that I did on this, because this is so new to me and so strange to go from Greek to Hebrew. I mean, from go to English to Greek to Hebrew, and then go to the letters and try to find anything I can. And then you have one language that is not concrete, is very philosophical, and try to find the most concrete word that would make sense to the five senses. It's really tricky. So I took a lot of notes on there and took a stab. Now, one of the things I did get, I have a little book that has about 500 words that are in Greek and giving me the Hebrew translation. And they give me several, and I use that where I could on this. They don't give me everything to do this whole section. But it was interesting. Sometimes I bow to them a little bit unless I could find something to contradict them. So, no, I don't have any trouble fighting this battle or defending this battle. All I can do is I tried to think in terms of what would Yashi really be saying. In fact, when I didn't think you were going to be able to make it today, and JB and I didn't have a chance to do this together the other day because we would cut off a little, we had to quit a little early. I was thinking about, you know, this is a really, I was going to juxtapose this, these things that Yahweh likes about a human being and his family, and put those against what I was just starting to read in chapter 12, because I had never read chapter 12 before. So I was, and you get a whole host of things at the beginning of people he don't like. So I was going to ride with that too. I'm glad you showed up, by the way.
But I think this particular statement where you're talking about, in English, blessed is the peacemaker, so you will inherit the kingdom of heaven. The high likely, if you were to take the most likely Hebrew perspective on this, then what he would have said in Hebrew would have, he would have used Asher as a verb. And as a verb, Asher conveys the idea that there is tremendous benefit for being one who reconciles, because they're on the proper path to life. And they will therefore inherit, because that's the covenant, they will inherit the kingdom of heaven, the spiritual realm. So it makes perfect sense.
It's
senseless in Greek and English, because what did Yosha say when he addressed the concept of peace? He said, "Do not think I came to bring peace, but instead to be."
The story between divine people.
So he could never say blessed would be the peacemaker when he said when he is the perfect example, and he's saying that he did not come to bring peace, but instead division. So that's why I think that you have to change your perspective to what would he have said in Hebrew that could have been twisted to peacemaker in Greek and in English. And knowing what we know about Shalom and the way Shalom is rendered peace, even though peace is only a derivative. You know, if you bring, if you reconcile a relationship, you brought peace and harmony to that relationship. And so the relationship aspects of reconciliation are replaced with a simple concept of peace. And when you combine that with this powerful word, Asher, I think you get something extraordinarily meaningful.
I agree. I
think you're on something there.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting that, most of the what's called the Beatitudes,
mm-hmm.
where he's talking about, you know, you've heard it said, but I say, that
yeah.
each of the three things that he's bringing up are, if you really study the history of the time, there were three religious sects in Israel, and that he's talking to Yehudim in Israel, and there were three distinct religious sects:
mm-hmm.
the Sadducees, the Pharisees, and the
Pharisees and the Ebionites.
Yes, yes. So the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Pharisees would be the right wing religious wackos.
Mm-hmm.
In today's parlance. Okay, so the right-wing religious wackos are the Pharisees. The liberal, political, socialist, secular, humanist, politically correct types would be the Sadducees.
Mm-hmm.
Those are your liberals and conservatives, both from a societal and religious point of view. The Essenes would have been the conspiratorial, you know, group.
Mm-hmm.
They would have been the Trumpites, make America great again. Okay, into their conspiracies, into their fake news, into their own, you know, we are a group by ourselves, and we're the world's against us, but you know we're gonna thrive anyway. That would be the, so today's mix is a perfect, today's America is in fact the Essenes, the Pharisees, and such. So that's what he was dealing with. So each of his three, you have heard it said, but I say to you, was a specific attack on each one of those three independently. The three things he brought up was the rallying cry. In today's political parlance, if you become a single item person, you know, a single issue person, well, the three things he brought up were that the issues of each one of those three sects. And so the purpose was to expose and condemn the three religious sects in Israel. Yeah, it's really interesting when you say Yeah. So, by the way, the reason I was on, you probably shared this, but my eldest son just had a son night before last, late at night, and they were released from the hospital late this afternoon. They arrived at their house at 6:30. The hospital they were, he works for General Electric, the hospital that General Electric chose for them did not allow guests, even family, into the room. So the first we had an opportunity to see, for me to see my grandson, and I'm here with my youngest son, was when they checked out of the hospital and returned home. They returned home this evening, arriving at 6:30, which was, you know, I flew into from Florida to pick up my youngest son that was here about 1 o'clock. But that was the 5 hours I thought we were going to be there, but they weren't home. So by the time I got there, it was 6:30, and you know, it's pretty hard the first time you see you meeting your grandson, and you're
mm-hmm.
saying, you know, thanks very much, but I have to leave now. So I didn't think I would be here at all because of that. I knew I'd get to show up for you, but wouldn't be here. It's interesting that the name that they chose for my grandson, and I am certain my son did not know this when he chose it, but he chose Jude. And Jude is the Germanic transliteration of Yahud.
Yahud.
Yeah. Yahud. Yahud. And there is Yahud, Yahuda, and Yahudim.
Yeah.
Well, Yahud is the, that's the, you know, the tribe of Yahud and Yahud and Yahuda. And then condemn, we're talking about the tribe of Dothan.
Yes.
The tribe of Joseph. And when you think about the Yahu, of course, is Yahweh. And then you have a WD. Well, what name has a WD in it? DWD.
It is Dode.
Dode. And so it's Yahud is essentially Yahweh's name in Dode.
Yeah.
And as such, it would mean Yahweh's beloved.
Yeah. Wow. That's true.
A really cool name. And so, Yahudah was circumcised today. It wasn't the eighth day, but he was at least circumcised today, so that was a good thing. So I was enjoying him, and of course, my granddaughter, whose name is Zoli, she is now 3, and she is just precious. And while she is a very, very good big sister, she's going through what every child does when a newborn is brought home, which is, Papa, will you play with me? Papa, will you read this book to me? Papa, can we go play hide and seek? If I want to make certain that I haven't slipped and that my world still revolves around me. And so it was really important to not run out and to continue to foster that. Yes, she's still very important. She didn't lose anything by having her brother here. And so we'll go back in the morning. But so I was celebrating a new life with a wonderful name, the most important name you can have.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, even though it's a corruption of the name, it's still the basis of the name, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, Russ, so. We'll have to write it out. I have to write it out on something in a pictograph form.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You'll be playing a little bit of catch football in the backyard, and then you can stop out there and play and have a tea party. That'd be good.
Yeah, that's right. I'm doing lots of tea parties and tricycles and pushing perambulators, baby strollers around with pretend babies in them. And, oh, yeah, we do. We play dollies and we play jewelry and we play makeup. We do all of that fun stuff. I just figured that, and I think this is the reason that we have this opportunity is that Yahweh really wants us to identify with what his intent is and what his joy is in being with us. And you look at playing with a 3-year-old or holding a newborn for the first time, and you notice that, you know, there's just chasms worth of difference in terms of intellect and experience and ability and all that sort of thing. And of course, that chasm between us and a child, while enormous, is just a fraction of what there is between us and Yahweh. But at least it gives us an insight as to that difference and how, even with that difference, we can love, we can interact, we can nurture, we can care, we can get great pleasure and satisfaction in the relationship and the family and life and make contributions and know all the wonderful things you want to share with them and do with them. And I think that it just reinforces Yahweh's perspective of us and what he's trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
So it is indeed marvelous. I want to take a moment and do a little Yeshayah 3:1.
Absolutely.
Or do you want to continue with what?
The last two is interesting that 5:3 through 5:8. I could find comparables to in parts of the Torah, and most of them were interesting enough. Most of them were Yeshayah and Psalms of Dove, where the words were used in the context. When you get to 5:9, 10, and 11, you don't have much of anything. There are no comparables that I could find. When you go through and say, where it might say, like in these, especially in these old Bibles, I use an old Bible for this a lot. And it will say, go to this verse in the Torah, this verse, well, they say in the Old Testament, I'll go to this verse, I'll go to that verse, I'll go to that verse. And these don't have any. But the words were pretty simple, so it's pretty straightforward. But the main thing, the gist of it all was that, to me, was that Yah is pretty clear on the type of people he wants. This doesn't contradict it at all. So much of this reads like we... like a call to go out and help the poor and everything. And I'm not against helping poor folks and things like that. But it's, mm-hmm. this is not the characteristics that God embraces and is looking for. He mm-hmm. told you what he's looking for, and he told you what he's not looking for. So it just mm-hmm. it was such a wimpy translation all my life. I just kind of was delighted if I could cut it apart a little bit and see what was really there.
Yeah.
So,
what do you think?
So let's go to 3:1. Or enter into a disappointed God.
I'm like you. Well, we're leaving the Greek there for a moment. Is mm-hmm. that if I can find in the Greek either the statement in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that Yosha mm-hmm. is citing, or the right. concept in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, he's paraphrasing so as to explain it. And paraphrase, I think, works beautifully because it's just a way of explaining what he had said. There's no reason to, it's not even God's style to say the same thing in the same words. So why should he, when he's explaining it, even you look at Devarim, there's some of the same words used, but it's a repetition in different words, from man's perspective, a man's perspective on what God said. So the paraphrase works beautifully for me, but mm-hmm. and then
well,
if I can't
you have the hard copy, you can't get confused on what it said because you can look those words up, and then of course we have a lot of words in our language to express things, and that's open.
So then the next thing we're looking for is, well, if I can't find a statement that he's quoting, is it possible to render the words that we have in Greek such that they are translating Hebrew concepts that Yosha would have said that are consistent with the main themes we find in the 12 Prophets and Psalms. And of course, it's important for the main themes to all be iterated in that instruction on the Mount. Right. So, my view, I think it's probably similar to yours, which is if we have Greek and we can't find an immediate basis for it, then unless there's some interesting twist on it of some sort, I'm just not going to pursue it all that far. Now, when you get to 5, 6, and 7, most of 5, 6, 7 is really profound in terms of him reinforcing the Torah and the role of the Torah.
Yeah.
But that's why I found that the whole issue with the 3, you've had it heard, but I say unto you, that all 3 of those essentially undermine what we find in America today, what we found in Israel circa 30 CE. And then he undermined the Sadducees and the Pharisees.
Well, they were very political.
Your view of it is the same as mine. Mm-hmm. The reason we are picking up again at that 3:1 is that we're going to push on through the 3rd chapter of Yeshayah here, and we want to do so by making certain that we don't just ignore what we have dealt with, because once we came to 3:1, we spent a lot of time analyzing some of the insights. So it reads, indeed, behold, and Hannah is the operative word. Pay attention. Look up now. The upright pillar of the tabernacle, Edom, Yahweh, of the spiritual implements, Saba, is rejecting and removing from Jerusalem and Yehuda the support which upholds life, the provisions extended by the shepherd's staff, all stores of bread, all supplies of water. Now, extraordinarily profound what he says, I'm going to do. So here it's Yahweh, the spiritual implements, and he's of the spiritual implements because he's a seven-dimensional construct being, and therefore he has to use implements and engage in our world. And he's removing from the one place he cares about, Jerusalem, and by extension, all of Yahuda, the support which upholds life.
It's a horrible thing to hear.
I dare say that for better part of of 2,000 years. And maybe you could even say 2,700 years. Because from the time of Yeshaya, was there really an example of any Israelite other than the prophets who knew Yahweh? Did the prophets even talk about having a community that shared their love for Yahweh and his invitations to meet and his covenant?
No.
I don't think that's a theme in a single one of the prophets.
No.
So you had the people speaking for Yahweh, but no one else. Getting all the way back to 700 BCE. And then when you look at what Yosha did, Yosha's fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, Bakodim, and Shibu, was mostly and overwhelmingly withheld. Because, you know, you've got 11 of the original 12 that spent time with Yosha. Certainly they benefited from it. And there were some that benefited directly from it in extension to them upon the fulfillment of Shavuot.
Yeah.
But after that time, the message was so corrupted by Shaul.
Yes.
Almost no one benefited. And I would say for the past 2,000 years, it might be 1,000 people amongst 10 billion or more.
Yeah.
So it really has been withheld. He did everything that needed to be done as the Pesach Lamb and on Matzah to facilitate our Bukurim and ultimately Shavuah. He did it all. So it's not, he didn't say, I'm not going to do it, but I'm just withholding it, the support for life. And it's being withheld because there was nobody availing themselves of it. So for 2,700 years, that's really a profound thought. And if you were to even look at it today, I would dare say that in Jerusalem and Yehuda, it's still withheld.
Absolutely.
I don't think there's a soul in Yehuda or Jerusalem that the covenant message resonates. The support which upholds life, the supportive pole which hold someone and something up, the basic provisions needed for life. The provision is ended by the shepherd's staff. Well, this is, to a large degree, it's Dode's teaching. He was the ultimate shepherd.
Yes.
It's, well, Yosha was not a shepherd. Moshe was.
Mm-hmm.
So the support extended by the shepherd's staff. Supplies used in some way, specifically a staff used to protect, to lead, and rescue sheep. And look at here, you know, the very title God, El. It's the ram's horn, so it's the leader of the flock,
right?
And the shepherd's staff in that downward position where the hook is lowered, so as to rescue sheep. All stores of bread, well, lechem. No, pure grains of bread are the symbol for saved souls.
Mm-hmm.
It's the bread of life. It is matzah. So he is withholding the upright pole, Pesach. He is withholding matzah. And all supplies of water. What, you know, we all know what water is, the source of life. Bukurim, firstborn child. So he's withholding Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim. This is what he's saying there. But that's not all that Yahweh is removing. His list of those he will not accommodate extends to the powerful politically, which is Gibor. It's one of the words that we have wrestled with so many times. Oh, the mighty, the strong, the militant, the warrior, the soldier,
mm-hmm.
the prominent leader, those that society views as heroes. The man of war. Boy, that's know, God Support Our Troops, you know, the Warrior Project, military commercial the other day, they were actually bragging about, you know, we're looking for warriors. Well, a man of war.
The war is arrogant, you know, an insolent person.
Yes.
I mean, it's, he identified them right away. I mean, and they're still there. That's what they breed.
Yeah. Milchama, that Yahweh is not going to accommodate the powerfully political. He says, no, they're not welcome. The man of war, those engaged in the military, no. The judge, the Shafat, the one who adjudicates and litigates. You know, I want to thank those who wrote me those letters of accommodation and character references. I haven't really talked about what happened, but... you know, I was charged with reckless driving, which was a misdemeanor, so I would have the first misdemeanor on my record. But I knew that the lights were not flashing when I entered that school zone, and I went back. Took videos, proved that the timing that I went through it was not flashing, had irrefutable evidence, and yet the officer didn't show up at the trial. And normally you're just exonerated, you go on. But the prosecutor wouldn't clear me. Said, no, we'll bring the officer back on another day. And so I was not able to give my testimony the day the officer could make it. I couldn't make it. And the officer didn't technically perjure himself, because when the judge said, you know, did you check to see if that light was flashing? So now it would be his word against my word. He's going to believe his word. He said, it's my habit, the light. He didn't say he checked it on that day. And he didn't check it on that day. I know it for certain that he didn't check it on that day. And in fact, I even have a timeline to show it's by the time that he gave me the citation. It's absolutely impossible. But what he said wasn't technically perjury, and the judge misinterpreted him when I wasn't there. And my attorney didn't know how to handle it, and so... I was convicted. So I spent another $3,000, because I don't like being miscast. I don't like injustice. So I spent another $3,000 because I thought the right thing needed to be conveyed, and I hired an attorney to appeal it. And who's going to appeal? Well, the fine is $175. Who's going to appeal that? Then that kind of might. Well, I did. And it was overturned. So, the misdemeanor was overturned. The prevailed on the case in appeals. So, I want to thank everybody for that. But one of the things I learned, I knew this already innately, but judges are extraordinarily arrogant. I mean, it's their personal fiefdom there. That's not maybe all judges are. But when I was standing in front of the judge, it was clear he was bored out of his mind. He really had no interest in hearing what I had to say, and my testimony was, what little I was able to give that day was of no interest to him. All he wanted to hear is what the officer said. And then he was so eager to hear what the officer said, he misinterpreted what the officer said. And it's just sad. So anyway, his view of judges isn't very good. He says, the judge, the shafat, the one who adjudicates and litigates. And the prophet. Whoa. You know, the people that claimed, early on we were doing this, how many letters I got from people that claimed to be prophets, and when I didn't want to hear what they had heard prophetically, how angry they got. All those people claiming to be prophets, God saying, you're not welcome. Makes me really happy to hear that. And I'm not being mean here, but it was my contention that there are no prophets today, and there haven't been any prophets since around 400 to 500 BCE. That, you know, Malachi and Zechariah were the last of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that we don't need any more.
Yeah. Okay.
Goodness, well, there's more that we've already had revealed to us through the prophets than we can even examine. And so their prophecies go right from the beginning of creation all the way through the end of time. There's no period of time that we lack information, and there's no shortage of information. I mean, here we go back and we find out that in Chabaouk, there's specific prophecies regarding Shaul, names him by name, tells us when he's going to arrive, who he's going to influence, or what his character flaws are going to be, what the stupidity of his message, and calls him the plague of death. Who would have thought that you'd have prophecies that cover that as well? And it's all there. So the last thing we need is more prophets. What we need is to care about what the prophets had to tell us, and to think about what they had to say, and apply what they had to say, and learn from what they had to say. But the people that are claiming to be prophets today, they're not welcome in heaven. No. And we've been really careful. We're not speaking for God.
No, we're reading right out of his scroll. I mean,
that's right. We're reading what he has to say to us. Translating it the most accurately and most completely as we can, and then sharing what the message is, what the connections are, what the lessons are, what the insights are that we can glean from what he had to say. And both, well, we're just scratching the surface. The surface we're scratching hasn't been scratched in 2,000 years, so it's still extraordinary what we're all doing. And the prophet. And also the one who promotes a better future. Make America great again.
Yeah.
And now we're. Yeah, all of this, the liberal politicians going to have the brave new world and their new world order. And how there's going to be, everybody's going to pay less taxes and get more benefits. Free health care for everybody. It's an entitlement. Free education for everybody. It's an entitlement. Right? All that kind of stuff. New politician. I'm going to make things better. I'm going to work for you. Make them better. Promising a better future. Because if you're promising a better future in this world, you are not speaking for God. Because is he promising a better future in this world?
No, I'm afraid he's got a dark view of what's about to happen.
No. Absolutely. Now, I will tell you that life with him is better. But when you're talking about society collectively, we don't try to solve society's problems because they can't be solved. So we're going to expose and condemn these issues with society because it's important that we do so, so that people stop relying on government, their military, their religion, and that they learn that those things are actually counterproductive and dishonest. So we'll talk about them, but only to expose and condemn them so that people are free of them and open to what Yahweh has to say. Because until you reject things, you're not in a position where you can act upon what Yahweh is offering. But the only thing we say is better is that forever is better with him. Not that the world's going to get better. It's going to get worse.
Yeah. Did you read about what they want to do with Halloween?
No, what's the latest on Halloween?
They want to give it a permanent status because it's the, with the millennium, 50% of them consider that their number one festival, their number one holiday.
Yeah.
We know it's huge compared to everything but maybe Christmas. Yeah. But the day what was significant was what day they chose to have it as a permanent day. I was thinking, well, I guess they're going to do Monday like Labor Day or something. They want it to be on a Saturday, the Shabbat.
Uh-huh. Yeah, of course. Replacement.
Replacement.
And it is, for people who are not religious, secular humanists, it's a big deal. It's a big deal for them. No, it's Halloween's a big deal for them.
And a big party.
And of course. And Halloween goes right back to Rome. But we are the reincarnation of Rome. It's a Roman religious holiday. Virtually every aspect of it has been carried into the Halloween that we celebrate today. People say, it doesn't mean that to me. Well, I don't care what it means to you. It's what it represents, and you ought not be doing things that are so condemned by God. The community and religious leader, as I can, the elders of society, the establishment, the leadership, the dignitaries. The more I've met leaders of society, the less impressed I have been. They're not impressive people. So if you want to be the leader of society, you aren't going to be with God. He's not looking for leaders. He just doesn't want leaders. He wants people
I think he said this to Samuel, didn't he? He said, go tell the people they don't need this.
Right. Yeah.
Got it covered.
The side of the leaders, I got it covered. You know, follow me. I'm going to walk the walk and talk the talk. Follow me. Let's walk together. You know, he's got the world's best kind of leadership. Walk with me. What better way is there to lead? You know, I've done a lot of backpacking. The thing I didn't enjoy is being second in line or third or fourth in line. The people in front of you are kicking up their dust. You're eating dust the whole time, and really the only view you have is the south end of a person walking north. It's not their most flattering angle. And so if a trail is wide enough that you walk side by side, and I go on a lot of bike rides these days, and I go on a lot of paddleboard. I've got into paddleboarding. Mm-hmm. And leading someone or following someone, not so good. But when you're in an area where you can go side by side and talk and experience the same thing together and look at the same thing, it's marvelous. So that's Yahweh's view of leadership is, let's walk side by side. Let's stand side by side. Let's engage shoulder to shoulder, eye to eye. The officer in command, the prince, the ruler, the chief, the captain, the general, the commander, the overseer of a military battalion of 50 or more. Now, I don't think Yahweh gives two hoots about the enlisted man.
No, I don't know.
Doesn't know them. They don't know him. It's as if they don't exist. But he knows the officers because they're the ones that are misleading. They're the ones that are asking men and women to do things they ought not be doing. And so the officers, just like the religious leaders, where the religious are victims, the leaders are victimizers.
Mm-hmm.
A Roman Catholic is a victim. The Pope, the cardinals, the bishops, the priests, they're the perpetrators.
Yes.
And so in this case, it is the those in command of 50 or more, especially one who exalts themselves. Oh, man. Reverend.
Him.
Yeah. Reverend. Holy Father. Yeah. Cardinals, your eminence.
Yes, my ring.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the stuff that God really despises. You know, that's why when we are given the, and there is a place where I think you can say, you know, I'm proud of that. And when you translate something that Yahweh said and realize an insight from it that someone hasn't thought of in years, and then you share it in a way that resonates with others and helps them grow, you ought to be proud of that.
Really?
That's an okay thing to be proud of. But you, even in that, you have to be proud of it in the sense of, okay.
Thank you for sure. Yeah, well,
not my idea. Not my idea. No credit whatsoever. Not my idea. No credit whatsoever. And the very fact that I'm doing this and speaking for all of us, and I'm speaking just in first person, but it's true for all of us who do this, that the only reason that we're in the position to do this is because we were unpretentious in the first place. Or Yahweh would never reach out to us. Passionate, enthusiastic, curious, desirous of investing the time, open, but not prestigious. If you want to engage with God, do something that He wants done, well, focus on doing what He wants done, and then rely on Him. Get out of the way. And rely on Him. So those who exalt themselves, well, you're in real trouble. You're not going to be used with God. And particularly those who exalt themselves in the presence of others, in addition to the counselor, who implies that his advice is valuable. Oh, my. You know, I've so many times said, you know, what's your advice?
Mm-hmm.
Well, rely on Yahweh. Well, what should I do? I've heard you. I I observe what Yahweh has to say. That's what, you know.
Yeah.
If you're offering advice and say, this is what I think you ought to do, I think you ought to invest here or live there, you're way above your pay grade.
You know, when you hear counselor, though, I immediately start thinking about lawyers, and then I start thinking about the entire government is run by lawyers. You couldn't,
yes.
You know, like 90 percentile or something like that of people in Washington or law or law firms or came out of law firms or something. It's,
yes.
By the way,
there are some really good lawyers.
By and large, the largest problem
my son had in law school. The only class where he got a B, which is, you know, a bad grade in law school, every other class he's done extraordinarily well, and it was legal ethics.
Mm.
And the reason is that legal ethics and morality are wholly disjointed.
Yeah.
Legal ethics is: are you going to forego morality and do what the law requires of a lawyer? Whose system are you going to apply and uphold? Legal ethics or character and morality? Are you going to do the right thing, the legal thing? And they're almost never in sync. So, no, that's a problem. And it doesn't depend, but by the way, it really depends on the kind of law that you practice. Like my son's going into intellectual property patents. You know, he's going to use his PhD in medicinal chemistry to help companies and individuals intellectual property. And there really is no difference there between ethics and morality. But if you're a criminal defense attorney, or prosecutor, or a litigator. Like there was a case down in Florida, where I'm living now, where a man owned a yacht and a deckhand, which is the lowest person on the boat, raped a stewardess. So this was a yacht that probably had 5 full time crew on it, and a deckhand, the lowest person, got drunk at a bar, came in and raped a stewardess. And, he first claimed it was consensual, and then admitted a year later that, maybe it wasn't consensual. And he was sent to jail for 2 years and then exported back to Poland, where he came from. But then the woman who was raped was convinced by some attorney to sue the owner of the yacht. Who wasn't there, who had nothing to do with it, who didn't encourage it. And the lawyer came up with this nonsense idea that because the woman was not given a walkie-talkie, and walkie-talkies exist all over yachts, but they're only used when you're docking.
Mm-hmm.
So I doubt they're used. Because she was not given a walkie-talkie, she had no way to communicate with the captain, and therefore the owner of the yacht is liable. And the jury, stupid as they are, awarded the woman $70 million of the owner's money. She went there, didn't rape her. Didn't try to cover it over. Had nothing to do with it. In fact, he didn't even hire the deckhand, because that would have been hired by the captain. $70 million. Can you imagine? That's like, you run a small business and you've got 3 or 4 employees, and one of your employees goes off and does something horrible, and through civil litigation, you're fined millions of dollars for what they did as a fugitive. It's just stunning how warped our society is.
Mm-hmm.
So the next is the including the shrewd, the skilled and crafty, the clever, the experienced, the knowledgeable, and yet deceitful, the religious practitioner. Yeah, this is not so good. The cleric, those involved in secret interpretations of pagan religious rites. That's when he wrote pagan wean on the thing, you know, Christmas is a pagan religious rite. Easter is a pagan religious rite.
Sure.
Communion, pagan religious rite. Sunday worship, pagan religious rite. New Year's Eve, pagan religious rite. Lent, pagan religious rite. Venerating Mary, the mother and child, queen of heaven, mother of God, pagan religious rite. A god that dies and is resurrected, pagan religious rite. I mean, God on a stick, well, worse, dead God on a stick, crucifix, holding up the cross. Sunny with people are doing. This is the religious practitioner. This is cherish. And the one who claims to receive and then imparts. The one who considers, is attuned to, and promotes spellbinding orientations comprised of enchanting superstitions. And I don't want to be a little bit careful while Cherish says, and I translate religious practitioner, it really is the cleric. It's the person involved in the secret interpretations of the pagan religious acts. It's not so much the those they victimize. The ones they victimize lose their souls, for sure. But it's the promoter of these things, the cleric, that has an actual penalty associated with what they're doing. And that's then underscored by the one who claims to receive and then imparts spellbinding orientations. You know, I have a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's spellbinding interpretations. I have a dream.
Yeah. And Billy Graham was good at that, too.
Exactly. So, these are things that God is saying he does not want. And I viewed all of this as God's clean house. He is not only withdrawing his support, he is specifically rejecting every political, religious, military, and academic leader. Everyone from the exalted to the shrewd, from the spellbinding orator to the political pontificator. Hey, Kirk, the good thing for us is neither of us are going to claim that we are the sober-tongued, perfectly sensitive or radio that we are the marvelous orators, that we can get up in front of a large audience and woo them. No, in fact, we were reluctant to do this because we knew we would trip over our tongues.
Well, you know, I suffer from severe stage fright, and it happens on the first tee. It happens when I have to stand in front of a crowd and teach, and also on this show every time. So I'm always, you'll find I start rather slow.
Yeah,
because
I don't have any stage fright because I figure what we're doing here is so it's there's nothing to be frightened about. But in particular, we're sharing it with family. But I don't care who we're sharing it with. It's just a wonderful opportunity. But I celebrate my inadequacies. I think ultimately Moshe got to the point where he celebrated his inadequacies. I know Dode did.
Yeah.
He celebrated his inadequacies. And it sounds like, well, that's craziness. Why would you celebrate your inadequacies? Shouldn't you celebrate your strengths? Well, no, not in Yahweh, because our strengths are those he gave to us. Right. He provides our strengths. And he overlooks our weaknesses, and it's by having inadequacies that we recognize that we benefit when we rely on him.
Yeah.
And we realize that when we have and acknowledge our inadequacies, that he's able and willing to work with us and through us.
Yeah. And then
we ought to celebrate them. Yeah, it's marvelous. Right. You know, it's in spite of ourselves that we manage to have these wonderful insights. And so he is consistent in all of this. Yahweh has been and continues to be in complete opposition to human institutions of this nature, especially those who seek to control others by the way of political, religious, and military edicts all the way through. societal constructs that man has established will all be overturned by God.
Well, name one of them in there that you'd like to keep. I can't find a single one.
The politically powerful and prominent leader? No. Whether a hero or a despot, a man of war, including the soldier who wields weapons in battle, the judge who adjudicates and litigates, the preacher or prophet who claims to speak on behalf of God, the one who promotes a better future, claiming to possess hidden knowledge, along with the ability to work wonders, the community or religious leader, the officer in command, the 50 or more, one who exalts himself and claims to forgive the failures of others, the counselor who implies that his advice is valuable, the shrewd, the clever, the crafty, the religious cleric promoting pagan myths, the one who perceives and imparts spellbinding for orations replete with enchanting superstitions, like you said. Which one of those do you want to spend eternity with?
Not me.
Just goodbye and good riddance. But yeah, I was consistent. Heaven is going to be a marvelous place where we get to camp out with God as his sons and daughters in an environment completely devoid of religion, of politics, and of all forms of militarism. What makes it so wonderful? Well, Kirk, thank you for doing this in my absence. Thank you, your wife, Terry, for bringing this up. She's a sweetheart. She called me twice on the phone. After I failed four or five times to get connected, we came up with a way that worked. I love your analysis of the statements of the Instruction of the Mount. All great stuff. And
thank you.
Look forward to continuing with you, and I appreciate everyone's patience and indulgence while I had a chance to celebrate a new life with a wonderful
family. That's a big deal.
Yeah, thank you.
We're happy for you.
Well, thank you. Good night, y'all.
Good evening. Shalom.